the impact would be to lower wages and benefits for both union and non-union workers, but not to do anything to draw jobs to the state.
The potential for right-to-work legislation in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the late arrival of winter is keeping the bears awake.
I got up and went out, turned the yard light on, and there was a big blonde grizzly sitting on my little porch.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Nearly half of all states have right-to-work laws that prohibit contracts between employers and labor unions requiring workers to pay union dues. Alaska is not one of them, but with a Republican-dominated legislature and executive branch, it is seen as a state where right-to-work legislation could pass. No bills have been introduced here since 2011, and the issue does not seem to be a priority for business or political groups. But labor groups remain concerned about the issue and offered a training on it this week in Juneau. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Gordon Lafer is a professor at the University of Oregon's Labor Education and Research Center and an associate with the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. He's studied the impact of right-to-work laws around the country and has an idea about how one would play out in Alaska.
To cut to the chase, the impact would be to lower wages and benefits for both union and non-union workers, but not to do anything to draw jobs to the state.
Proponents of right-to-work laws often sell them as a way to increase employment in a particular area, but Lafer says the real goal is to weaken unions and workers' rights in general. A study done by his colleagues at the Economic Policy Institute shows full-time employees in right-to-work states make about $1,500 less per year than employees in non-right-to-work states, regardless of whether they belong to a union. He also says workers are less likely to get health insurance through their job in right-to-work states.
The idea of right-to-work is to lower wages and benefits in hopes of drawing more manufacturers into the state because theoretically that's why they would come, is because it's cheaper because people make less.
Lafer admits he's not an expert on Alaska's economy, but says it's hard to believe manufacturers would flood to a state with such high transportation and shipping costs if right-to-work were enacted. Currently, manufacturing accounts for only about 4% of all jobs in the state, according to the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
On the flip side, the things that are here and that are the big industries, which is, you know, mining, oil, tourism, seafood, and government employment, including the military, like those things aren't going anywhere. They're here because of the natural resources of the state. And the real question is not how to get them here, but whether those are going to be decently paying jobs or crappy jobs.
Local labor groups brought Lafer to Juneau this week to give union members a primer on right-to-work issues. Alaska Public Employees Association business manager Doug Swanson moved to the capital city about a year ago from Wisconsin, where he saw firsthand how quickly anti-union legislation can be adopted. It took less than a month for the Wisconsin legislature to approve Governor Scott Walker's bill restricting public employee bargaining rights. Swanson says the same thing could happen in Alaska.
The trend right now nationally is to whittle away at rights workers have, regardless of what state you're in, a blue state, red state. And so, I'm worried that if we wait, you know, we're just going to be forever watching an erosion of the working class.
In many states, chambers of commerce are the ones pushing for right-to-work laws, but not in Alaska, at least not yet. Ryan McKinster, communications director for the Alaska State Chamber, says the issue didn't even come up at the organization's recent legislative policy forum. Juneau Chamber of Commerce CEO Kathy Romick, who serves on the U.S. Chamber's Committee of 100, says right-to-work is not on her radar. The last time right to work was introduced in the Alaska legislature was 2011, when a bill by the late Republican Representative Carl Gatto went nowhere. Rodney Hessen is the assistant business manager for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1547 in Juneau. He says even though right to work does not appear to be a priority for business or political groups in the state, it remains a concern for unions.
Right to work has been introduced previously, so this is just an ongoing conversation. And, you know, having more facts, reliable facts, to have a decent conversation about what we're really talking about, that's the main reason I'm here.
In 2012, Alaska ranked second nationally behind New York in the percentage of its workforce covered by a union. The right to work training was sponsored by the Juneau Central Labor Council, the Juneau Building Trades, and the American Federation of Teachers. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Alaska Court of Appeals has found a former law was ambiguous with regard to whether it banned text messaging while driving. The decision comes in the case of Tyler Adams, who in 2011 was charged with texting while driving. Magistrate Jennifer Wells granted Adams' request to have the case dismissed, citing unclear language in the law. While some lawmakers said they intended to ban text messaging while driving with the 2008 law, the appeals court, in a memorandum of opinion, found the legislative intent in that regard was ambiguous at best. The law referred to driving with a screen device operating, but didn't mention text messaging. Legislators in 2012 amended the law to spell out circumstances in which someone would commit the crime of driving while texting. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is overhauling the state's public housing system. Effective April 1st, any family with one able-bodied adult in the household will see yearly rent increases, and after 5 years, the assistance will end, and they'll be responsible for paying their own rent. The changes will impact those renting public housing and those receiving voucher assistance to rent private units. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Brian Butcher, the executive director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which runs the state's public housing programs, says the rent reform will free up Alaska's overloaded public housing system, making room for only the most needy.
What we've developed is what we call a rent reform program, where we help educate and work with individuals that are in our public housing that can work to get jobs and to work and eventually move out of public housing.
Butcher says it's all part of a national trend.
There's a real emphasis on housing agencies doing what they can to help people in the public housing to eventually get jobs and move out of it. So this is one piece of it that's being done by a lot of housing agencies across the country.
Since 2008, Alaska has been participating along with 38 other agencies in 22 states in a national demonstration program called Moving to Work, which is behind the rent reform. The reason for the reform, says Kathy Stone, director of the Public Housing Division of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, is that there are simply too many people staying in public housing in Alaska for too long, and that creates huge waiting lists.
Statewide, they're extremely long. In fact, we are going to be closing waiting lists around the state soon. We have over 10,000 people on our waiting lists. People are looking at over 10 or 20 years of being on a waiting list. It's not an efficient or effective way to manage our program.
Congressional sequestration cuts reduced their budget by 9% last March and made rent reform more urgent. Seniors and people with disabilities won't see many changes. They account for about half the people in public housing in Alaska. Current residents age 57 and older will be grandfathered in. AHFC will work with those with serious medical expenses on a case-by-case basis. But households with at least one able-bodied person will be required to participate. Stone is tasked with overseeing the implementation of the program.
This actual rent reform implementation has been about 2 years in the works of development, working with a consultant, analyzing other plans, and coming up with our own.
Here's how it works. In the first year, rent will be based on family income. In years 2 through 5, they'll be responsible for more and more of the rent. After year 5, they can stay in their housing but won't qualify for any assistance. They can go back onto the waiting list, but they'll have to go back to the bottom of the list. Stone says renters will also get help from something called the Family Self-Sufficiency Program.
It's a federal program, a demonstration program that changed our entire public housing division. We now get block grants from Congress to run our programs. We are tasked with meeting these three statutory criteria, and one of the main ones is to create a rent reform policy that encourages work and self-sufficiency for families.
The Family Self-Sufficiency Program is currently only offered in Anchorage and Juneau, but the plan is to offer it statewide soon. Officials say the rent reform program will impact about 2,500 families statewide. More than half of those families are in Anchorage. Stone says the transition to rent reform will be a challenge, but in the long run, it'll be good for the state.
Going into rent reform is just being good stewards of the federal funds. The fact that we're facing some budget cuts helps us in our need to make these changes. Looking forward, I think we will realize some savings. Initially, it's really just a break-even, but it's a more efficient way of managing the program, as well as a way of encouraging people to go out and find employment and become more self-sufficient.
In Bush communities like Bethel and Nome, where there's a severe lack of affordable housing, low vacancy rates, and low incomes, Stone says AHFC is considering a hardship extension after the 5 years are up. The program begins statewide next year in April. People living in public housing and those receiving vouchers will be informed of how rent reform will impact them by mail in the coming weeks. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, high school students in Juneau try their hand at TV news.
This is something I love to do. I'm very passionate about it. It's just something that spikes my interest, I guess.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
A message to parents from the Alaska Department of Education. Learning to read is the basis for all future learning. Parents can help their children get off to a good start as readers. Read with your young children every day. Do lots of talking with your kids. Make up stories together. Play games with words like rhyming games. Encourage your kids to write and draw stories and ask your school how you can help your children become good readers. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
Winter has been late in coming this year. Temperatures are only now starting to get to levels near the seasonal norms. While this has meant extra time to split wood and change vehicle tires, it has also meant that bears have been active later in the year than usual. KTNA's Philip Manning has more.
Early Tuesday morning, Talkeetna resident Ed Craver was awoken by his dog, Cusco, who was apparently having a bad dream. Ed managed to calm Cusco down and get him back to sleep.
And then a half an hour later, I kind of just dropped back into sleep, and I heard him growling. And if you know my dog, I mean, he's a ferocious beast.
Cusco weighs less than 25 pounds.
So he kept growling, and I got up and went out and turned the yard light on. And there was a big blonde grizzly sitting on my little porch.
Ed banged on his metal door and tried to make as much noise as he could, but the bear, which Ed estimates at 6 to 7 feet long, only moved a few feet from the porch. That's when Ed decided to retrieve his shotgun. He opened the front door, and the bear started toward him.
So I am obviously a little conflicted about what I should do. I know if I close the door, that would just simply aggravate him even more, and I would have a bear in my house.
Ed decided to shoot at the ground ahead of the adult grizzly. Between the bright flash of the gunpowder and the boom of the shotgun, the bear decided it was time to go elsewhere. Ed says it's the second time a bear, possibly the same one, has been around his house since the beginning of November. He says that in 40 years living in Talkeetna, he's never seen a bear this late in the year. Ed is not alone in spotting late roaming grizzlies. At least two other listeners have contacted KTNA to say that they've seen bears roaming near the Talkeetna Spur Road. Ed's concern is that hungry bears roaming later than normal could pose a significant risk to people in town, especially children.
And I just have shivers when I think about, you know, the prospects of a small kid out playing in the yard or something and then suddenly comes upon a bear and then decides he needs to run away.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is aware of the impact that the long autumn is having on bears. Todd Rinaldi, a wildlife biologist with Fish and Game, says that there have been significant effects on when bears are deciding to hibernate.
You know, there are a bunch of factors that dictate when bears go into hibernation: weather, the amount of light, snowfall. But one of the biggest factors is their ability to acquire energy and to continue to feed throughout the fall. And when those food sources go away or become unavailable, that's kind of the last trigger for them to go into hibernation.
With fewer fish in the rivers and the berry crop all but gone for the year, bears are looking more and more to trash cans and other human-created food sources. Todd Rinaldi says it's still too early for people to relax on bear awareness.
So it's a really important time of year for residents to really secure their garbage, to secure their dog food, or to make sure that the electric fences are working around their livestock and prevent bears from getting into chickens and things like that. And one of the things that the department recommends is even to hold off on putting out bird feeders until even later in the month so that those food sources are not available as well.
Todd Rinaldi said that bears aren't the only wildlife being affected by the late arrival of winter. Moose along the road can be harder to see without a blanket of white to contrast against. Wolves have a harder time catching prey, and many small animals that use snow for insulation or camouflage will be at a disadvantage until snow flies. As for the bears, he says as long as they can find food, they'll likely hang around. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
Most old Halloween jack-o'-lanterns ultimately end up in the trash, but as a group of kids in Bethel learned, the gourds can still go out in a blaze of glory. KYUK's Ben Matheson has the story.
The sugar buzz should be mostly worn off, but there's still Halloween thrills to be had in the form of launching pumpkins through the air. On a wet Saturday afternoon, Ricky Ramos positions the launch arm of a tall wooden catapult-like device.
I guess it's a modern trebuchet.
That is, the medieval siege weapon used to break down castle walls with flying rocks, or in this case, it's tossing rotten pumpkins in a skate park. 9-year-old Kylie Twito explains the basics.
They're shooting off pumpkins. They put it in a bag and they shoot it off.
With an old jack-o'-lantern in a canvas bag, Ramos begins preparing for launch by cranking down on a hand winch. After a short countdown from the gathered crowd, Ramos pulls the firing pin and drops the massive counterweight. The 15-foot arm swings an arc and launches the gourd a good 30 yards before it explodes on the concrete with a satisfying splat. Ramos downloaded instructions online and built the trebuchet last year. He says it's ultimately a simple device.
See, the arm, it helps it go farther, but the counterweight's to move the arm faster. And we got about 316 pounds in there.
The physics of the device and the best throw are an approximation for these purposes. The choice of pumpkin, however, is a big part of how it performs.
For show, they're the smaller ones. They go a lot farther, and last year we ended up using watermelons, and they ended up going the whole skate park, hitting the fence.
In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugia, Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon, Wrangell, Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ariel Van Cleve. This week on AK, live TV. Every week, a group of students at Juneau Douglas High School puts together a 10-minute live television newscast for their video production class. They shoot the video, write the scripts, and edit their stories. They don't have much of an audience. Their most popular YouTube video has 57 views. But it's really not about ratings. Jeremy Shea dropped by the JDTV studio and brings us this story.
Outside room 119 at Juno Douglas High School, a sheet of paper taped to the wall says, "Fog machine in use." It's the Friday before Halloween, and the usually no-nonsense control room and JDTV News anchor desk is dressed with spiderwebs, skeletons, jack-o'-lanterns, black lights, and strobes. It's a hectic scene as students, several in costume, distribute last-minute scripts, set mic levels, practice camera moves, and load teleprompters. And then there's Jessie Gregg.
I'm a freshman.
She's in front of a green screen wearing a green bodysuit that covers her from neck to toe. It's a visual effects gag. Viewers should only see her disembodied head and gloved hands floating over the weather graphics. The effects test goes well.
It was a little weird not to see my body when I like looked on the screen, but it's a pretty cool effect.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Jessie. That looks pretty good.
That's Miko Wilson. Miko, and he goes by his first name with the kids, too, runs the class and directs the newscasts. It's one of several part-time TV gigs he has, including with Public Television's 360 North. Miko's busy, but there's another idle observer. Karen Smolin manages the school district's career and technical education programs, which includes Miko's contract.
Miko's doing a great job. He's been doing this for several years with us. And we've got a full studio here, and people need to know about it.
Ready for rehearsal!
Can't better get out of here.
The rehearsal gets underway, and the first few minutes go smoothly.
Thanks, guys! And now for the weather. You may have noticed a teensy bit of rain.
Okay, bit of bad news. We need to stop our rehearsal there. We have 25 seconds to air. Reset to the top, please. Black on air. First graphics ready.
Resetting takes more time than they have, and the teleprompter has a problem seconds before airtime. There's a flurry of chatter and activity in the control room while dead air stretches on.
Ready two?
The class is engaging and doesn't come with much homework, but it's stressful, especially on shoot days, because of the emphasis on professional responsibility and deadline pressure. Junior Liam Porter Bell is neither in the class nor a regular viewer, but he checked out the studio during his free period one day.
Seems like an interesting class.
Do you watch their newscasts on Friday?
His friend, Kyle Short, who's taking the class and is clearly proud of the show, took a sudden interest in how Porter Bell answered.
Not usually, no.
Short gave his friend a glaring stink eye, and Porter Bell eventually coughed up some half-hearted praise for the show.
Well, I mean, sometimes people watch it. I mean, I know a few times it's been pretty good.
There are extroverts and introverts taking the class this semester. But unintentional obscurity, rather than weekly televised shamings, is probably the safer bet for teen fears that may be realized through the class. Kendall Roberts doesn't even go to JDHS. She's a senior at Yokosuka Dakahiti Alternative High School, but this is her second year in the video production class.
This is something I love to do. I'm very passionate about it. It's very fun and interesting to learn new things and just something that spikes my interest, I guess.
Back in the studio on shoot day, the technical problem's been ironed out, and Miko's countdown begins.
Okay. Ready? We're going to go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, take all. Mic 'em, cue 'em.
Hello, I'm Jade.
And I'm Miriam. Ready? Welcome to a very spooky episode of JDTV News.
Dun, dun, dun!
This is JDTV News.
About 10 minutes later, the newscast winds down.
And we are stopped. And we're all clear. We can turn off the on-air light.
Camera one off comm.
We ran over.
Miko calls everyone into the control room. The broadcast started almost half a minute late and went too long for the 10-minute slot on local cable channel 6. Viewers saw black at the beginning, and the show cut off before the end.
How did we end up with black? Prompter had a problem, and we cannot go without the prompter at the start of the show. Okay? What caused that problem? We weren't ready. The script was not ready by deadline. The deadline for the script is before class on shoot day. The bit that wasn't ready is weather.
The students get a lesson in responsibility and consequences. Individual problems pile on and affect the whole team. And the fog machine? They never fired it up. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Larson Bay, a small community on Kodiak Island.
My name is Kara Darling. I live in Larson Bay, Alaska, and I work at the tribal office. We are in a bay, Larson Bay, so we are on the coast. You see the ocean, and there's mountains all around. We have about two roads, and when you first get there, you would see the post office, the school, and our city building, which is pretty much the extent of our office buildings besides the tribal office and the clinic. We're known as Bear Country because we have a lot of bears in Larson Bay during the summertime. We have about seven lodges that people come out to see the bears and do the fishing. I think we even had Jonathan Taylor Thomas out here, I heard. Right outside the tribal, there's a creek that leads to the ocean, and during the summertime, you can go out there and just see bears about 10 to 15 feet away eating fish, and they pretty much just leave you alone or just eat the fish. And like this last summer, me and my supervisor looked out the window, and there was a baby cub just standing on its hind legs about 3 feet from our office. It's actually even illegal to walk up to our dump during the summertime. You have to have a motor vehicle because there's so many bears. We just had a carnival at this Halloween carnival at the school last week, and that was a lot of fun. The kids put it on. They decorated the gym all spookily and did a cakewalk and sold hot dogs and that type of stuff, played games. In the winter, it's very, very quiet. We probably only have, I would say, less than 60 people. In the summertime, it's a lot more busy because we have all the lodges open and then we have the cannery open. The rent is really cheap out here, to be honest. That's probably one of the best things.
Kara Darling works for the tribal office in Larson Bay. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Jeremy Shea, Monica Goki, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ariel Van Cleve. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, and Ben Matheson in Bethel. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by First National Bank of Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for more than 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com. And by Rural Energy Enterprises, supplying Alaska dealers with fuel-efficient Toyo stoves and Oil Miser heaters for more than 26 years. Local dealers can be found at rural-energy.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.